Thank you, everybody, for submitting your mailbag questions. Let's get to a bunch of those in today's episode coming up right now. Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. Thank you, everybody, for submitting your mailbag questions for today's mailbag edition of the podcast. The response is overwhelming. We have more good questions than I could possibly get to in this one show. But let's get started here with the Bucks, because Giannis is in the news right now. Shams reported the Bucks and the Knicks had trade talks over Giannis this offseason. And Giannis had said publicly about this, "I've said this many times, I want to be in a situation that I can win, and now I'm here. If in 6-7 months I change my mind, I think that's human too." Totally fair for Giannis to say that, in my opinion. It's honest, it's true, it feels very genuine from him. It's very interesting here with Giannis, because he's in a situation where the Bucks roster is like not great on paper, but the East really stinks. So let's go to Xavier on YouTube. Xavier said, "If it goes downhill for the Bucks, which team has the best Giannis trade package?" We'll talk about the negative side from the Milwaukee standpoint first here. The one thing to keep in mind is there's no use in being bad if you're the Bucks, because they don't have their first round pick until 2031. So I'm going to give two separate answers to this question here. Number one, the Bucks don't care about Giannis's wishes. Like, Giannis wants to go to the Knicks, he wants to go to the Lakers or the Warriors or whatever the big market team is. They don't care. They're worried about the best trade package available. I'd say that trade would be from the Brooklyn Nets. I think the Nets can offer the best package realistically for Giannis, because they could put together some appealing salaries. Nick Claxton, Terrence Mann, Yegor Demin, a rookie. You could plug and play a bunch of different young guys in that place. And they have a ton of draft picks this year. They have a lot of draft picks again. And so Brooklyn, they're in a situation where they're not a winning team. They're not, quote unquote, ready for Giannis. But they did get Michael Porter Jr. They do have a lot of good young guys. If they get Giannis, suddenly they're potentially the destination for the next team. So I think the Nets would be the team that realistically could put the best package together. There's other teams with a lot of picks as well, but I don't look at those teams like OKC is not going to do it. They already have an established team. They're not going to be a team to put it over the top. Utah's not ready, even though they have a lot of picks. Houston, you could make that argument. I just think it'd be like too much of a dramatic change for the Rockets. So I wouldn't go there. And I think the other side of it is the Warriors do care about what Giannis wants, that they do factor in his wishes to go to a winning situation. And in that case, I'm intrigued by the Warriors. And I think with them, it's in part because of the Steph Giannis relationship, but they also have the perfect salary. It's a match. Jimmy Butler. Now, the Bucks probably wouldn't want Jimmy Butler, and I don't think Jimmy Butler would want the Bucks. So that would be a whole thing. I'd imagine Butler diverted to a third team for other pieces like the Suns. The Suns have a bunch of guys that could put together a Jalen Green, Dylan Brooks, salaries, Grayson Allen. They could do something like that. And the Warriors, because they're so old, their future picks down the line would have some value. And you might be wondering, why is Kuminga not in this? Well, the thing with the Warriors is because if they were to give Kuminga, it's really hard to get to the $54 million for Giannis. And I think that's something to keep in mind when it comes to what Golden State's intentions would be during the season. During the offseason, it's a whole different conversation. But during the season, it would have to be like Kuminga plus Moody plus Hield, and then a bunch of like guys making $3 million. It's just not realistic. Or they'd have to give Draymond Green. And so I don't really see that being the path it would be if it's the Warriors. With that said, I would expect Giannis to finish the season with the Bucks. To me, this is more of a next summer thing. I just feel like it's just so hard to make such a dramatic change during the NBA season. But who knows? You know, we just saw Luka get traded earlier this year from the Mavericks to the Lakers. And I've got some crazy Giannis trade ideas that I decided not to include here. But if you want me to share my craziest Giannis trade idea, one that I think would break break social media even more than the Luka trade did, let me know. Leave me a comment if you want me to reveal that trade idea that I have next episode. A quick story here, because the other side of the Giannis thing was Doc Rivers. Doc Rivers fully declined that this happened, these discussions between the Knicks and the Bucks even happened. And he said, in his quote, "I read where it said several conversations." Well, that never happened. It was a conversation where a team called and John Horst, the Bucks general manager, has been saying no now for 11 years. I don't know why this is a new story, but I guess it is. And I haven't brought this up in many years. I don't even know if I've ever mentioned it on a podcast, but back in 2016, this is before I was hired at the Ringer. At the time, this is when the Celtics missed out on Kevin Durant. There were real rumors in league circles at that time that they were having conversations with the Clippers for Blake Griffin. This was like a story that became big enough locally in Boston and LA that Doc Rivers went on Woj's podcast at the time, and he said, quote, "We are hoping that Blake ends his career playing for the Clippers, period. So when teams call, we say we have no interest." First of all, no teams calling right now because teams know we don't have any interest. And Doc brought that up on the podcast, unprompted by Woj. He led the show with it, I remember, at the time. And it's just funny looking back because Doc is so good at lying through his teeth. Because in 2016, he said that. In 2017, Blake Griffin, he signs a 5-year contract extension with the Clippers, and that was the year the Clippers gave him this whole big show. Clipper for life. They gave him a t-shirt and they all this and that, the retirement, fake retirement ceremony. And then 6 months later, Blake Griffin's traded to the Pistons. He's blindsided by that. And so I've got a hard time trusting anything Doc Rivers says ever since then in 2016. But with that said, I would imagine that the Bucks, for a reason, are trying to move forward with one of the greatest players that we've ever seen in NBA history, which is why let's move on to an optimistic side of things here for the Bucks here with an email from Mike. Mike said, "With a much more athletic and mobile center, what's the Bucks' defensive ceiling with Giannis and Turner?" And Mike mentioned in his email how in their opening preseason game, he saw Miles Turner locking down Bam Adebayo, playing higher up in pick and rolls compared to what we've seen Brook Lopez do with his deep drop. And, you know, I think, Mike, like, this really aligns with the vision that we heard about a year ago. 1 year ago, before the Bucks brought back Brook Lopez, there were rumors about how they wanted to play a more versatile style of defense. They wanted to modernize what they were doing on that end of things. And I think when you look at their rotation now, this Bucks team, on paper, this has the upside to be a really great defensive team, especially if they get a locked-in, intense Giannis on this team, because they have size and length and versatility. And then the Turner Giannis front court could be really freaking good, man. Like, Turner's a good defensive player, not an elite one, but very, very good. And he fits exactly what the Milwaukee Bucks want to do this year. And so if you get DPOY level Giannis, that is really what can put them at the level of top five, top 10 defense. But they just have so many different guys, so many different combinations, a lot of length and versatility. I think the Bucks can end up pretty good defensively. Offensively, with Giannis, anytime he's on the floor, you're going to be great. The questions are, what does it look like around him? And that, to me, is the biggest question involving the Milwaukee Bucks this year. And I'm sure for Giannis, that's the biggest question for him, too, when he looks down the bench and looks across the roster and he's surveying the floor and it's like, oh, I'm kicking it out to Kyle Kuzma. I'm kicking it out to, you know, Andre Jackson. You know, it's just a lot of guys who are iffy shooters, whoever it might be on the floor. All right, next email here from Bryant. Bryant said, "Which team do you think has the widest range of possible outcomes this season? Genuine contender to potential play-in collapse or full-on tankathon?" All right, so Brian, thank you for the question here on the email. I would say this. It's got to be a team in the West, considering how deep it is. The East, I feel like you can slot teams into tiers quite easily. But in the West, there's just so many good teams. Somebody good is going to miss the playoffs. So it's got to be a team in the West. And it would also have to be a team that has their own pick, because you're asking for the most variance. Championship contender or like full-on tankathon? And to me, I think it narrows it down to a pretty clear answer here. The Dallas Mavericks are the team with the most variance this season because you can talk yourself into this team when you look at their potential rotation. When Kyrie Irving comes back, this team has the pieces to be just big across the board with Lively and AD and Cooper Flagg and Daniel Gafford and PJ Washington in the front court. That team is huge with front court versatility. A back court with Klay Thompson as a shooter and Max Christie, who's really freaking good, and Caleb Martin and D'Lo as a spark plug. And then Kyrie comes back and you get Najee Marshall off the bench. There's just a lot of depth and talent on the roster. The upside of this is like they're an elite defense. And they have a really good offense throughout the season that becomes great when Kyrie Irving is back. And suddenly, like, you know, Nico Harrison is like, I told you so, you dummies. And they win a championship. That's the, you can talk yourself into that. But you could also easily talk yourself into this team not having enough shooting and guys getting hurt, AD missing time, and there being issues on this roster. And you can also talk yourself into Kyrie not being the same, or Kyrie deciding to sit out, and Cooper being good as a rookie but not great as a rookie. And all the injuries happen. Lively's missed time in his career. AD's missed a lot of time in his career. Klay Thompson's old. Kyrie coming off the ACL. And you can talk yourself and this team into being like, yeah, maybe we're better off missing the playoffs. Maybe Kyrie sit out the whole year. And suddenly they're in the lottery again. So I'd say the Dallas Mavericks are the team with that by far the widest variance in the Western Conference. Next up, we have Jake on Spotify. Thank you for all the Spotify comments, by the way. We got a lot of those. Really fun to see people participating on Spotify because YouTube is always the place people comment all the time naturally. Spotify, it's nice to see that activity. I appreciate you guys showing up. So Jake on Spotify said, are you going to do a fantasy basketball preview with the season approaching? The answer is yes. Next Thursday, a week from today, I'm having Dan Titus from Yahoo Fantasy Basketball on. We're going to be talking with a segment after another guest I have on. We're going to talk a little bit of fantasy basketball. Another one from Spotify from Luke. Who's your sleeper pick for a rookie that we'll look back on as a top three player from this draft class? All right, so I'm going to set a rule here. This player can't be taken in the top six because I think, you know, I would probably say Trey Johnson. But we'll avoid that. Ace Bailey, we'll talk about him in a little bit when we get to a question that prompts a Utah Jazz answer. So I'm not going to say him at number five. Let's move down to Cedric Coward. He goes to the Memphis Grizzlies. Cedric Coward, if you've listened to my podcast earlier this year and all of my draft content, you know how much I love this guy. I love Cedric Coward. I think this dude is a great shooter, a versatile defender, plays hard, makes the right plays on the floor, an elite kid, an elite worker. And I just love the fit for him in Memphis with a little bit of youth and a star in Ja Morant to grow next to on a team that now that Desmond Bane is gone, they really need a co-star next to Ja Morant. And so I think there's a path for him to grow into being that guy, but also there's a floor for him to be a really good role player. So I'd say Cedric Coward would be the first one with the Grizzlies. The other one, you know, and you mentioned him in your comment, Luke, Carter Bryant from the San Antonio Spurs. Carter Bryant makes sense here because he's 6'8", he's long, he's a smart player, a great cutter, very active. Hopefully the shot is really falling for him with the Spurs. Offensively, we know the things that he can do. Maybe he becomes an on-ball guy over the course of time. Defensively, that's where the dude is like guaranteed to be a good player. He is so great defensively, potentially a lockdown guy, and at a minimum, at least highly versatile. And so I'd say Cedric Coward and Carter Bryant are those two guys that we could look at years from now and say, okay, they should have been taken in the top three. The other one I'd say like out of the top 20 real quickly, Will Riley with the Wizards. Will Riley with Washington is interesting because everything I just said about those other guys, length, versatility, a bit of ball handling ability. Will Riley is somebody who I think could exceed expectations if things really pan out for him in Washington. If you're enjoying the mailbag so far, please leave a comment saying so on YouTube or Spotify, or mention it in a 5-star review on Apple, because I think there's a chance we do more of these. This was a great response. You guys submitted a ton of questions. I have a lot of them to get to. Let's go to a comment on YouTube replying to my conversation with Amin El Hassan earlier this week, and that's from My Gaffer on YouTube. He said, You guys are big naysayers with Kuminga. With the extra shooting the Warriors have now, JK can fit with way more lineups. I think you guys are going to be way wrong on this one. I don't think he'll be traded this season. You could be right. You totally could be right. We've seen him in two preseason games so far. And Kuminga last night on Wednesday had his big block that was, you know, overturned on Shaedon Sharpe at the rim. He's taken a pass-first approach that he's talked about and been pretty open about. I still question the fit. I still question the jumper. He had multiple turnovers on inbound plays. It's just like so sloppy. Sometimes I don't think he knows where to be and when to be and what decisions to make on the floor as a passer. And that's where things move so fast for the Warriors and their half court offense. And if you're making mistakes on inbound passes, I mean, it's just, you know, things like that, that still worry me. But ultimately, you know, like Gaff, you're not wrong about the shooting and the depth the Warriors have. They can put Kuminga into positions to succeed more frequently. But overall, I still think ultimately the Warriors signed him to that deal because A, it's not a bad value for a guy who's still young and he still has potential. And B, it's a super tradable contract. It's so tradable. They can package it with if they want to, Buddy Hield or Moses Moody to get over $30 million, to get to nearly $40 million. They can put together different trades with Kuminga, and it's a short-term deal, so other teams would have interest as well. So I lean towards he's the piece they'd be more likely to trade, but I also am very understanding of the perspective that they're going to keep him this year, and this is the best situation he's had throughout his career. Let's move on to an email here. We got Kevin, or Kev, from Philly. Kev said, with your last two bright future teams coming to fruition, the Suns and the Thunder, who's the team this year that was playing adjacent last season that will take the next step? My pick would be the Blazers, especially if Sharp and Denny take a jump. I like the Blazers' choice from that criteria of these like kind of playing adjacent teams. I would agree with you there on that, Kev. I remember, I think maybe year eight or year seven of the mismatch, Verno and I had said the bright future Pistons. So I think they have kind of panned out as well. So, I mean, you asked for a playing adjacent team. I think the Blazers are the answer there. I'd go lower in the standings for the bright future team, like I did with the Suns when they were at the bottom of the barrel. And like the Thunder were at the time when we said that. And I'm going to say the bright future Jazz. I love what the Jazz are building. I think the Jazz are putting together a lot of really, really appealing young talent on their roster. And we saw Ace Bailey make his debut against Kevin Durant and the Rockets on Wednesday night. Boy, oh boy. Like, there's a chance he makes a lot of us draft dudes look really, really dumb. He has a chance to make teams 2 through 4 look really silly as well. 25 points in his debut, and it wasn't just like transition bucket, you know, open three-pointer. It was pull-up, relocation three. It was attacking off the dribble. It was such a diverse variety of moves and ways he was scoring. And he also passed the ball a bit too, like off the dribble with fluidity. And this is why on draft night, I said, this is the perfect situation for him with the Jazz and that Will Hardy offense. And so I always say this every year, if I had known a player would land on a certain situation, I would have ranked them higher or lower. I would have ranked Ace Bailey higher than 6th if I knew he was going to land with the Utah Jazz. I just think this is an ideal situation for him. And on top of all the other young talent the Jazz have, like, he could be their star. He could be their star. And that was the thing that was appealing when, you know, I call it the bright future Suns because of Devin Booker and my belief in him. That was the appeal in saying it about the Thunder because of SGA and what he was and what he was becoming. And with Ace Bailey, like, suddenly it's like, they have a guy who has this path, and it may not work out. He may end up just, you know, being a high volume, inefficient scorer. But at the same time, like, even aside from Ace Bailey, there's just so many young guys on this Jazz team and so much different talent that I feel good about them being back in the playoffs at some point in the future. The West is so loaded, it's going to take time. But at some point, I'm liking the Utah Jazz.
We'll be right back.
Let's go to a YouTube comment from Daniel. Daniel said, there's always a team that surprises everyone. Last year, it was Detroit and Cleveland winning 60-plus games. Who would you pick to wildly exceed expectations this season? So I was looking at the over-unders for win totals this year, and I think, you know, the Sportsworks did a good job setting these. I think a lot of them are pretty accurate. The one I'm looking at where I'm like, could I see this team exceeding this win total by 10-plus games? And a lot of people are going to turn off the pod. Some people are going to say, how can you still believe in this team? It's not that I believe in this team. It's the team that could surprise everybody. The Philadelphia 76ers. I mean, 43.5 wins in the week East. To me, that's an easy, I'll slam the over just simply based off the fact if Embiid plays 60% of the games, if he has a healthy year, if it's a healthy year. The last two seasons, Embiid has played only 58 games, but they've been on a 55-win pace in the games in which he's played. So if you get a healthy Embiid and you get Tyrese Maxey, if Paul George is a bit better than Tobias Harris and Jared McCain and all the other talent the Sixers have on this roster, to me, 43.5 feels really low considering how bad the Eastern Conference is. And so I would say the Sixers, compared to that number, so I'd go with Philly here, and I know that's, to me, it's just purely a gamble on, is Embiid going to stay healthy? I think that's really it. Like, does Embiid stay healthy is really the only thing. And I think other than that, like, I would, again, stick to East teams here. You know, the Celtics and Pacers, maybe they're more competitive than people would expect without their star players. No Tatum for most of the season, if not all of it, and no Halliburton for all of the season with the Pacers. Maybe they exceed expectations. Maybe, you know, if you're a more casual listener of the podcast, maybe you're not, you know, envisioning the Atlanta Hawks being really good after their big offseason. So maybe Atlanta. But I would say the Sixers, because that 43.5 feels really low for me when I look at that roster and just the potential of Embiid being healthy. All right, speaking of the Celtics and the Pacers, from Tehran on Spotify, he said, why are you higher on the Celtics compared to the Pacers? I think Siakam is a better number one option than Brown. The Pacers' returning roster has shown more next man up capabilities, while the Celtics will be dealing with major roster change. Completely fair. Totally fair. The reason why I'm higher on the Celtics than the Pacers is simple. It's because there's a chance Jason Tatum comes back and Tyrese Halliburton doesn't. And so for Boston, everything you said is completely fair. I totally get it. But also, Halliburton's not coming back. He's going to miss the whole season for the Pacers. Tatum could. We could be entering February and the Celtics could be hovering around 500. And then we could be hearing rumors about how Tatum might be returning in the middle of March. And so I think with that possibility, I view this Celtics season through a little bit of a different lens than I am with Indiana. To me, with the Pacers, it is purely about, what does Andrew Nembhard become? Like, how do these young guys develop? Does Benedict Mathurin take a step? What does Pascal Siakam look like as a number one option again? Like, or does Nembhard become the number one option? Like, what are the things that change with the Pacers? And also, I don't think you can rule out the loss of Miles Turner. You know, you want to talk about losses. Miles Turner is a big loss for the Pacers. And so I think the Celtics still have a good team. Like, their front court, the center position is weak on paper, but could end up being, you know, interesting. With Xavier Tillman, as Nekias Duncan said on my podcast last week. So, look, man, I think both of these teams are going to probably hover around 500 or slightly above it, considering how bad the East is, or maybe slightly below it. But the Celtics could get Tatum back. The Pacers will not get Halliburton back. And I think that would be the simple answer to your question. Noah email, he said, what is the realistic ceiling of the Indiana Pacers in the next 5 years? I'd say this is an easy one. It is still winning a championship because of the depth of this roster and the amount of talent that there is. If Halliburton can come back and be himself, this team can win a championship. Now, can Halliburton get back to the level we saw him in the last postseason before he ruptured Achilles? Well, that's a big question. Same thing with Tatum in Boston. Same thing with Damian Lillard in Portland, and DeJounte Murray and any player that ruptures their Achilles. But hopefully these players are as successful as Kevin Durant was with his return. But I'd say the Pacers could win a championship, but the Halliburton question is the big, big if there. From AJ, an email. AJ said, what would Luka have to do this year to earn MVP? AJ, thank you for the question. I believe it was probably your dad who sent this, and he said you're 10 years old, so appreciate you possibly listening to the podcast in the car with your dad. Appreciate it. AJ, what does Luka have to do to win MVP? Luka needs to maintain his elite level conditioning over the course of the season. I say elite by his standards. Obviously, there's a different level that other players reach, but by his standards, this is as good as it gets so far. And so if he can maintain this over the course of the season, stay healthy, continue competing on defense, not experience a dip with his efficiency as a scorer, he's going to put up the numbers. We know he's going to have the volume. We know he's going to have the efficiency. If he leads this Lakers team to 50-plus wins, they're a top four seed in the loaded Western Conference. He's putting up big numbers. He's playing better defense than he ever has before. Like, suddenly, I think a lot of media members, the 100 people that vote, you're going to have a lot of people talking themselves into Luka as a first-time MVP. And so I think it's like doing the same things he's done before while also doing a little bit more, while also playing a little bit better on defense throughout the entire season because he's in better condition. And so that's where I would lean with like what Luka would have to do. And I think it's also some things out of his control too, as well. I mean, Luka can have the best year of his career, but SGA could be even better. The Nuggets could win 60 games and Jokic could be the best he's ever been. Like, there's a chance that happens. What if the Bucks win 50 games and Giannis averages, you know, the best numbers of his career? There's a chance Luka could be awesome, but other guys could be still a little bit better. But I do think that the media narrative aspect is, you know, if Luka is indeed what we think he could be and should be, that is going to be a factor when it comes to the media voting. Thank you for the question, AJ. Nick emailed us. He said, which teams from the East and West would you want to see personally play in the finals if both squads are healthy? This answer is, I'd want to see two teams that haven't played in the finals for a long time or have won a championship for a long time. That's the Minnesota Timberwolves and the New York Knicks. And there's also the factor of that I think it would be really cool considering the Cat-Randall trade that if those teams were to face off together. I mean, the Knicks haven't won since the 1970s, and the Minnesota Timberwolves never have. I just think it would be really cool to see those teams rewarded and see them play in the championship. And plus, they're teams that have made big moves. I appreciate front offices with courage and the willingness to take risks in the name of trying to win and compete for a championship. So I think both those teams have done that. Another email from Alex from Charlottesville. Alex said, approximately how many families will the Wemby to Cornette passes feed? And any thoughts on the new Taylor Swift album, Kevin Ophelia? good one, Alex. French Vanilla, which is the most brilliant teammate nickname I've ever heard for Victor Wembanyama and Luke Kornet. For Wemby and Kornet, French Vanilla, I hope to God we see a lot of big, big pick and rolls like we have so far in the preseason with those two together. I mean, the Spurs have been creative, man. I mean, we've seen some smaller players screening for Victor. We have seen Victor play with a big screening for him. They're going to put the ball in this guy's hands this year, it seems, apparently. And boy, I'm just excited. I'm excited to see Kornet as a screener for Wemby. I just hope we see a fair amount of two bigs. To me, I think it's something that I want to see with Victor. I don't want to see him as the lone big on the floor in the name of experimentation. Maybe you learn that what happened prior with Zach Collins is a mess and that you're not going to play two bigs. But I think with the right big, it's worth experimenting with. And as for The Life of a Showgirl, it's solid. It's not my favorite T-Swift. I've given it, I think, 5 listens since it released. The Fate of Ophelia, very nice song. Actually Romantic, nice song. There's like good songs, there's good moments, but I don't find myself so far wanting to revisit it over and over like some past Taylor Swift albums. But so I need it to grow with me. I like it more after my fourth or fifth listen than I did after my first listen. So I'll give it more time. I'll be patient with it. It's got nice sounds. You know, it's nice. Like I liked it most when I listened in the car rather than when I listened intently at home with my headphones on. I liked it in the car in the background. It felt just, it was nice to have on. So I like it so far, but it's not my favorite Taylor Swift. I like it more than her last two albums. But I don't like it more than I'm an Evermore folklore guy. I really like Red. Those are my probably three favorite Taylor Swift albums, I'd say. But thank you for the question, Alex. Let's move on to Jacob. Jacob said, "Hi, KOC. I'm a high school senior and I want to host a podcast someday. What advice do you have for me to get started? Also, there's a girl I want to ask to prom. How should I do it?" Thank you for the question, Jacob. I'll answer the second part of your question about prom first, because I think it directly leads to the answer to the first question. And in some ways, I'm not the right person to answer this question because I didn't go to my senior prom. But I did ask one girl, and I always thought she was like the most beautiful girl in the school. Like she's the type, like she didn't think she's the most beautiful, but I thought so. And so it took me a long time to come up with the courage to do it. And I remember like when I did it, when I asked her, my heart was like beating out of my chest. I was probably sweating profusely. And I asked her in the hallway one day, and I remember she like looked super surprised. And she said something like, "Oh, I'd like to, but I need to ask my parents." And because she was a sophomore, her parents were super strict. And so I understood, of course. And I actually felt optimistic about it. And, you know, a few days later, she said they said no, they don't want her going out with a senior. I was like, I totally understand. It's okay. And, you know, I didn't do anything else. I didn't ask her, you know, could we go on a date instead? I didn't ask anybody else. I just was sad and ate the L. I wallowed in my sorrows. And, you know, at that age, I just feel like I didn't know how to take the initiative. I didn't know how to like take agency in my own life, even though, you know, I did have the courage to ask. So maybe in some ways that I did. And so, you know, how should you ask her out? You just do it. Even if you're nervous, just do it. And like, it's really that easy. Just do it. You know, and I think tell her you think she's cool or beautiful or whatever. And it's early in the school year now. We're only in October. You know, maybe, you know, when you ask her out instead of waiting for prom, it doesn't have to be this whole big thing with prom as the first time going out with somebody. Just do it sooner, I would say. You know, I think that's really the answer to both your questions, because no matter what it is that you want to do, you have to take the next step. You just have to take action. Like, no matter what it is, no matter how nervous you are about it, you just got to do it. And so I think it's also okay to fear failure, because you're going to fail sometimes. You're going to get denied things that you want. You're going to have doubters. You might even doubt yourself. And so I think you just got to like push through all that, you know, no matter what it is, and take actions in your life that put you on a path towards the person that you want to become, and like direct actions in terms of a podcast. What can you do? Save up for a solid starter quality microphone and just start recording. Like, your team makes a big trade, record it, post it on YouTube, and learn how to edit videos in a program like Adobe Premiere. And like, I think in college, I would imagine it was like this at the time when I was in college, they have discounted subscriptions for monthly subs to Adobe Studio. And so you could learn how to edit videos in Adobe and get good at that. And, you know, I saw a clip on social the other day of this guy, Palmer Luckey. He used to run a VR company, and now he runs a company called Anduril. And he was talking about using your young person privilege when it comes to emailing like famous people and all that. And I think that's good advice. Like, CEOs and bosses and executives and writers and podcasters, whoever it is that you might admire in the field that you want to, you know, enter into, they're more likely to respond to you if you say, "Hey, I'm 18 years old and I really like this," than if you're, "I'm 38 years old and I want to learn more about this." So people care a little bit less if you're, you know, past 30 or past 25, but use your young person privilege and just like email people, reach out to people. ask questions, put yourself in a position to meet people and try to get experience. I'd say by pushing for internships early in college, rather than waiting for your junior, senior year at the local newspaper or the local TV station, whatever it might be. And so it's like, you know, just take action and definitely ask out the girl. Definitely ask out the girl. So do that, Jacob. We got an email from Jake. Jake asked, can we get your top 10 Mountjoy songs in order? All right. So we're going to do studio only here. And my top 10 doesn't include their biggest hits like Silver Lining or Strangers. It doesn't include the fan favorites like Astrovan or Jenny Jenkins. All of them great songs. I love all of those songs very, very much. But let's rattle through 10 to 5 before we get to the top 4. 10, Bug Eyes. 9, Lucy. 8, Mountjoy. 7, Rearrange Us. 6, I'm Your Wreck. 5, Don't It Feel Good. Number 4, Dirty Love from their first album. This is the song that hooked me on Mountjoy. The ukulele that comes in at the start. It's a very short song, 2 minutes and 44 seconds, but it's a journey. And I'm a Pink Floyd guy. I love songs that evolve. I love songs that start somewhere and end somewhere else or come back to where it began. And with Dirty Love, like in a short, under 3 minute song, I felt like, oh my God, there's so many sounds and like the guitar that comes in and the drums that come in. And it's just a beautiful, amazing song. And, you know, when I first heard Mountjoy, it was their first two songs on their first album, I'm Your Wreck and Dirty Love. After I heard Dirty Love, I went home that night, listened to the whole album again the next morning and fell in love. And almost a decade later now, or what is it, 7 years, 8 years later now, still love the band just as much as I did, if not more than I did when I first heard them. Number 3, Julia. The song is just so good. You know, it's just such a nice song, vivid story. The lines that begin the song, I'm ordering food, hide, I don't know why. I'm so nervous. It's just such a good vibe. The whole song just sounds good. The piano that begins at the song and the live versions. I'm not factoring in live versions with this ranking, but the live versions would probably push it even higher on the list because Jackie on piano and the improv in the middle of their songs and how they cover songs in the middle of Julia. Just so good. So good. Number 2, Orange Blood. I love this song. It's a song about love. It's about falling in love. It musically, it just makes me want to move. And like I said with Dirty Love, like this song just has so many different textures and sounds. And there's like a groove in the middle of the song. I think it's like 2 minutes, 30 seconds, 3 minutes into the song. And like I want to hear them. What's a 10-minute version of Orange Blood look like? That's what I think about when I hear this song. It's just such a good song lyrically and musically. I think it's one of their best. But number 1 on the list, Bathroom Light is my favorite Mountjoy song. Bathroom Light is just perfect. It is, again, about love. During the most recent show I saw Mountjoy perform at the Garden in Boston, a couple proposed during this song. During the bridge of the song, the lines, because someday we must return the movies in our brains. In these moments we can't fake. Yes, the angels never leak the expiration date. This thing is so beautiful. You know, it's just so beautiful. I mean, it's about love. It's about taking advantage of the time that we have. And I love that song so much. And I love that song live. Just with everybody sings along in the crowd. And I'm just so happy for the band Mountjoy. Because if you've been a long time listener of me, you know, I had Matt Quinn, their lead singer, on the show on one of my pods sometime in the past. Awesome guy. That band is just amazing, amazing, amazing people. It's nice to be friends with them, and nice to also be friends with people that I love, genuinely love their band. So thank you for that question, Jake. We're going to wrap it up here a little bit shorter for today's mailbag episode. We don't want this to drag too much, but I want to do more of these. I like doing the mailbags, even if we did like a question a week or two questions a week or at the end of an episode or something like that. Like, what do you guys think as listeners? Do you guys like these mailbags? Leave a comment saying so on YouTube or Spotify, or mention it, please, in a 5-star review on Apple. That really does help out the show. We could use those. And I think, you know, maybe we do more of these. I there's so many other questions that I have that maybe we do another one next week or sometime before the season. So let me know if you want more mailbag episodes, and possibly we'll do more of these throughout the season. because I'm enjoying doing these. I always love communicating back and forth with you guys, and maybe this is the best way to do it. So let me know in the comments if you want more of these. Appreciate you guys listening to today's episode. Thanks to Emmy for producing today's episode and Carter for helping out as well. Thank you to Father John Misty for the music. And thank you for listening as well. We'll be back next week, next Monday. We got special guests coming on Monday. I'm very excited about the whole set we have next week and everything we have ahead of the NBA season. So thanks for sticking around. Thanks for listening. Have a good weekend, everybody. Talk to you soon.